Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, today we're going to talk about one of our favorite conversations, something that we have been working on and with families and talking about with families for years.
Right.
Over a decade now.
That's true.
Because we've been...
far over.
Right.
Almost two.
A decade and a half.
Whoa.
Because we started working together in 2002, and here we are 2017.
That's right, it was 02.
Yeah.
15 years.
So...
no wonder I don't like you anymore.
I feel like I'm getting old.
Oh, no, you're not.
I was saying that for your sake.
I'm not getting old.
That's right. You have the formaldehyde is in there. You're sustaining...
you know that bullet coffee that you drink? You put coconut oil in yours? I put formaldehyde in mine.
Is that
formalin.
It?
That's what you say. Speaking of which, there was a man. He is the head of the orchestra that does opera for Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
He did a special concert last night to celebrate his 100th birthday. He was the conductor of the orchestra. The guy looks like he's 50.
Yeah.
100 years old. So remember when I told you that I wasn't going to be here much longer?
Mm-hmm.
I changed my mind last night. So you better just get used to the idea that I'm doing this till I'm 100. So I got 10 more years to go. So anyway.
What do they call that again?
I'm going to
pull up.
No. What? It's different from tweener. Tweener. We have to come up with a name for people like me who won't get old.
Oldies?
No, I'm not old.
The golden oldies.
No. That's like, what's her name? Dorothy. Never mind. Anyway.
Alice, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I forget her name. Anyway, because I'm old. So anyway, this guy, 100 years old. I have to get the clip for that.
I mean, this guy looks,
it was just unbelievable to watch.
Conduct
100
big
years old.
Orchestras like that. I mean, you have to have lots of flexibility
and
just,
he's, you know,
cognitive. Yeah.
And he's really talking, then they interviewed him afterwards and he was clear. His voice was clear and strong. You know, normally when you're that age, you know, you start to get a little change in your voice. Your resonance, and his was just as strong as it could be.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I have renewed hope. I have renewed vigor, renewed
Fantastic.
Hope. I saw this guy last night, I said, holy cow. There's a pediatrician in Georgia, she's 102 years old, still practicing. And she does all the old remedies, you know, because there were no medicines when she started. She's 102, and just as clear, and so I've changed my mind about how long I'm going to be here now. So anyway, this topic is about ending... And that's because there are two topics that are of special. Well, there are many topics that are of special interest to us.
Yes,
this is one I have been struggling with, both as a parent and as a professional, for a very long time, and I know that other parents are too because we see them.
Right.
It's about the parent-teen control battle.
Yeah.
And this is a new approach to that.
That battle that we see between parents and teenagers over who's in control of what and who has say in what is done and when it's done and how it's done. And
and you and I are a little bit atypical in this regard.
Okay.
Because we believe, I'll speak for me, we believe, I'll speak for me.
You said that you're going to speak for you and then you still use the...
I changed my mind halfway through the sentence. We believe that parents should not be battling for control over their children.
Sure.
They should be working with their children, especially teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Most especially older teenagers. You know, if you're dealing with a 12 or 13 year old, it's one thing. If you're dealing with a 17 or 18 year old, it's a completely different situation.
Right.
And I don't think parents make that transition because we have to make that transition from attachment parenting to detachment parenting. And there's a transition that parents need to make, and many parents forget to do that.
Right.
And they want to treat their 18-year-old like they treated, or their 17-year-old. And then you get into that battle of, well, I'm 18 and I can make my own decisions.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So So you don't treat an 18-year-old like you treat a 13-year-old, just like you don't treat a 5-year-old like you treat a 10-year-old.
Right. Okay?
So you and I believe that parents ought to work with their teenagers rather than battle with them over control of who's going to make the decision.
So much more effective.
Right.
So much more effective. And so we we came across this. It's an older column.
Right.
From our blog at PsychReg.
Our colleagues in England, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And this was written by Neil Brown, who's a psychotherapist in, I think, Colorado.
Colorado.
That's it.
Right.
And so I'll include the link in the show notes, but it is from back in November of last year. Mm-hmm. But, you know, certainly these principles are still completely relevant.
Right. And I encourage readers to read this because there are some real gems. There's really, really good information in this article.
Right.
And I've been thinking about these things and wondering how best to present them to parents. And he articulates several of these ideas
right.
in this. And he ends by giving very concrete recommendations
right.
for both teens and parents.
Right.
So it's a valuable article. I was really impressed when I read it and thank him for including it in the website.
Well, so let's sort of begin with this, with what the problem is.
Right.
And the problem is that, you know, as our children age, what we tend to do as parents is we tend to attempt to exert a similar amount of control, sort of like what you were saying a moment ago, a similar amount of control on our teenagers as we do on younger kids.
Right.
And so we want to dictate when they go places, where they go, who they're with. You know, we were recently, and we're going to have an announcement about this in a little bit, but, you know, we want to, or we think that we're going to have some control over what they're viewing and on television and what they're exposed to
right.
in different places. And the reality is that we just don't have the ability to control those things.
No, I mean, you were alluding to 13 reasons.
Right.
There's a lot of talk today about 13 reasons. And the many parents' initial response is, well, where are the parental controls?
Right.
How do I use my parental controls so that I can make sure my child doesn't watch this? And
right.
there is no way to stop it.
Right.
I mean, your children will find a way. You know, there's a wonderful line from Jurassic Park, nature finds a way.
Right.
Kids find a way. They're going to access what they want to access.
Right.
And there's almost nothing that parents can do
right.
about that.
Right.
So they're going to pursue the things that they want to pursue.
Right.
One way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what we're suggesting is parents need to get over this idea that we can exercise enough control to ensure that our children do only what we want them to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah. It's not going to happen. And it's a fruitless attempt or endeavor because it's really just going to create more problems. It's going to create more issues that you're going to then try to control. And that's going to lead to other issues that you're going to attempt to control. And it's just going to perpetuate itself and become a compounding issue.
That's right. You're going to find yourself in this vortex of control and anger and being discouraged and angry at your child and discouraged with your own inability to control things.
Right, right. You
know, it's fruitless and in the end, damaging.
Right.
It's going to damage your relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you were saying a moment ago, you know, one of the things that we try to do, or one of the things I know that we encourage, is this idea of, you know, shifting from attachment parenting to detachment parenting. And when we say attachment parenting, we're not talking about that new parenting style of attachment parenting where your kids are sleeping in bed with you until they're, you know, 13 years old or anything like that. We're talking about attachment parenting from the perspective of being engaged with your children and being connected to them and, you know, listening and working with them and that kind of stuff. Not, you know, not the other.
No. It's not that sort of thing. It's that we are close and we're doing things with them, but eventually they are going to begin to separate.
Right.
And when they do, we have to let them separate, but gradually.
Right.
But separate nonetheless.
Right.
And there are parents who believe that they have this obligation to control everything their child is doing until the child leaves home.
Right.
And it's you're going to get into battles that you're not going to be able to win
right.
if you have that idea of parenting.
Right.
So we urge caution. the other, where this begins is, and the other place this begins, and I'm, as a parent, I'm guilty of this, we try to change our children's behavior.
Right.
There are things that our children do that we don't agree with, mm-hmm. or that we don't share that value that they have. And so parents are determined to change a child's behavior. Right. How do they do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they might punish them.
Right.
They might withhold privileges. Mm-hmm. They might take them to therapy.
Right.
They might take them to a counselor. Some use medications. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are all sorts of ways that parents can utilize to change their children's behavior.
Right.
The problem with these things is we get immediately into a control battle.
Right.
Because the child is brought to a therapist mm-hmm. who allies with the parents.
Right. Or at least from the child's perspective, allies with the
parents. Now it's my parents right. plus this therapist. Mm-hmm. So we become part of the problem.
Right.
Inadvertently, we're drawn into this control battle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw a girl this past week who is on medication mm-hmm. For her ADHD symptoms.
Right.
And she doesn't like taking the medication
mm-hmm.
Because most kids, as you were saying, right. they don't like taking the medication because they see it as some form of control. And right. what was interesting, and the reason that I'm even mentioning it, is because she talked about it in exactly that way. That she says that she doesn't see any difference mm-hmm. in it. She says that she doesn't, it doesn't make her feel bad. It doesn't right. make her feel like a zombie or drowsy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't upset her stomach. It doesn't give her a headache. It doesn't have, from her perspective, it does nothing for her.
Right, right.
But she admits that her parents and her teacher says that she is doing much, much better. Her grades are improving. She's getting her homework done and all this. And so I'm asking her, well, then why are you so opposed to taking the medication? If it's not giving you any adverse effects,
right,
if
right.
it's not hurting you, it's not bothering you in any way, and it gets your parents and teacher kind of off your back because
right.
they're
yeah.
thinking that you're doing, why are you so opposed to it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. My parents just want me to take it. Yeah. And so for her, it's just, despite the fact that it's only benefits for her,
mm-hmm.
And again, in the very least,
and she acknowledges that.
And she acknowledges it. Mm-hmm. She is opposed to it because it's a way that her parents are controlling her.
That's right. That's right. Because what happens with whether we use medication, psychotherapy, group therapy, individual therapy, cognitive behavioral, mm-hmm. dialectical, no matter what approach we use, the beginning assumption is that the problem resides within the
right.
child. Okay,
right.
So this is the first mistake we make
right.
as parents and therapists is
mm-hmm.
that the problem resides within the child.
Right.
Okay, and what this therapist is saying, Brown, is saying is that it may not be a problem within the child.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a problem in the interaction between
right.
the parent and the child.
Yeah.
And so it's a major shift in focus away from bad kid
mm-hmm.
to there's something wrong with our interaction.
One of the things that I think you do the same thing, though I'll speak for just me.
We.
What we do
I knew.
Is, I was looking for the opportunity.
Revenge.
But one of the things that mm-hmm. I know that we do is during our first session with mm-hmm. with children and families that we're going to be working with is, you know, I know that I work very hard to be very specific that, you know, I know that you're coming here, and this is, I say this with the parent and the child still in the room.
Right.
I say, I know that you're coming here because of concerns with the child, but the child lives in a system.
Right. That's right.
And mm-hmm. typically, just whenever we're talking about a system,
right.
it's very rare that there's just one cog that's out of place.
Right.
Usually it's the entire system that needs to be adjusted and you know, issues need to be resolved. And so I'm working in that way to let the child mm-hmm. know right away, look, it's not just you.
Right.
This is a systemic issue. We got to work with the whole system.
Right.
And so there's going to be things we got to do with the parents to change things. We got to
mm-hmm.
do some things with the child to change things.
That's right.
And that increases the child's buy-in. They're
mm-hmm.
going to be much more
mm-hmm.
involved in the process if they know that, okay, if I'm going to work to make some changes, but so are mom and dad. They're going to be working to make some changes too, because now somebody is going to listen and hear that they are doing some things that are causing some problems.
I think the biggest fear that teenagers, especially teenagers, have, and I think even younger kids, but especially teenagers, is that they're going to come in here and now it's going to be mom, dad, and the therapist against them. Now I have three adversaries that I have to battle against. Mm-hmm. Okay, and when we and it's important for us to explain to the parents that the child must see us, in part at least, as their advocate.
Mm-hmm.
The children have to see us as their advocate. The teenagers need to see us either as an ally, not against their parents, but at least in support of the teenager.
Right.
And that doesn't mean we're taking sides. It just means that this teenager, if the teenager is going to do any work to solve the problem, they have to feel like they're part of the solution, and the solution simply isn't being imposed on them,
right?
Whether it's medication or non-medication therapy.
Oftentimes that puts us in a position of almost like a mediator,
right?
Because typically what's happening is that the parent isn't understanding what the teen is trying to say, and the teen isn't understanding what the parent's trying to say, and so, you know, more times than not, probably, we're left in a situation where they're both saying exactly the same thing, but they're just saying it in different ways, and with the expectation that the other person is going against them.
Right.
And so they're not really listening to what is being said and what is being suggested.
Right. And one of the conflicts, one of the ironies of this conflict is that the parent and the child are probably, they probably share the same goal.
Right.
And he talks about that at length in the article. They probably share the same goal. Mm-hmm. It's just that they're locked in this titanic struggle with each other, and they've forgotten that they're probably after the same thing.
Right, So one of the things that he says, so we talk about this battle that we have, and you know, we'll kind of get into it a little bit, I suppose, the idea that that most of the time the battles that we engage in are unnecessary.
Right.
They are battles over things that don't even matter, really.
Right.
Battles over things that are just that are just better left.
Sure.
Like there's no reason to battle. Oh, some parents are going to already have a hard time with this one. There's no reason to battle with your teenager over homework. There's no reason to battle with them.
You know, but Ross Green says that, you know, in The Explosive Child and all, that's what everybody says, is that it simply isn't worth fighting over most of these things, especially with an older teenager.
Right. If you care more about their homework than they do, that's the problem. Not whether or not they're doing their homework.
Right.
It's the value system that's the problem. Mm-hmm. We need to fix that. You're not going to fix that by demanding, taking away everything from them. You're not going to fix that problem with punishments about not doing homework.
Right.
If your teenager really wants to go to college, really wants to go to college, and he or she understands that to go to college, you have to have decent grades,
right?
Not doing your homework is going to have a natural consequence.
Or let's not even call it homework. Not preparing adequately, whether it's homework or tests or whatever it is, not doing enough work on your own is going to jeopardize your chances of going to college.
Yeah. We've talked about it in previous podcasts, but by the age of 12 or so, it's not a battle that you're... It's a battle that you may win, because what you're going to do is you're going to work very diligently to make your child's life miserable until he or she complies.
Right.
So it's going to be successful from that perspective. But you're not teaching them the skills and the values that are important, because what will happen, and this is what I present to parents all the time, what is going to happen should your child go to college? If the only reason that he or she does homework and studies now is because of fear of punishment for doing otherwise, what makes you think that when they go to college, that value is all of a sudden going to appear? The only difference is now you're paying thousands of dollars for them not to study.
Right. That's right. It's a $10,000 gamble.
Right.
Per semester.
Right. So so don't fight that battle. Right. The first time your you know, again, if your child is anticipating going to college and wants right. to go, the first time your child gets a C or a D on their report card, mm-hmm. that's going to either fix the problem or it's going to resolve our questions.
Right.
The question of whether or not he or she really wants mm-hmm. to go to college. Because mm-hmm. if he makes a C or D on his report card and doesn't bother him, that probably means that he's not going to be a state university type of person. He may be a community college type of person right. or mm-hmm. a junior college or a trade school or something like that, which right. is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But as parents, we tend to have these grand ideas that, okay, he's going to go off to a state school
right.
or he's going to go off to a private university mm-hmm. and, be very successful. And those are great aspirations for our kids. Mm-hmm. But those are our aspirations. They're not necessarily the child's aspirations. And so you can't impose that on them.
Well, but parents do.
Right.
There are parents who say, my goal as a parent is for you to get all A's.
Right.
And so the entire family is, but what if the child doesn't share that value?
Right.
And not all children do.
Right. What if the only reason they value that is because you value it?
Right. So they get all A's and then what?
Right.
You know.
What if the only reason your child wants to go to college is because you're telling them that's what they're supposed mm-hmm. to do next? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's not allowing them or affording them the opportunity to live their life.
That's right.
They're living mm-hmm. your life.
Because there's 100 other things they have to do to get ready to go to college
right.
with all, and they're not going to do those things because they're just not going to develop those skills because
right.
they're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Right.
Yes, they're getting all A's, but they're not developing the other skills
right.
that they're going to need.
Right.
So we're talking, there's a delicate topic here, whether it's homework, religious beliefs,
mm-hmm.
Foods that they eat, hairstyles, clothing styles. We have to remember that in the teenage years, children are going to begin to mark off their own life choices. They're
mm-hmm.
going to begin making choices, and those choices may differ from those of parents.
Right.
And you simply can't battle
right.
over every one of these decisions.
Right.
You know, children become vegans.
Right.
Because their parents eat meat. If your
right.
parents are vegetarians, the children are going to be carnivores.
Right.
It's just the opposite.
Right.
And so you can't fight over curfews and cell phones and homework and athletics and extracurricular. You just can't be battling over all these things all the time.
Right.
Okay. And so what this fellow is, what Dr. Brown is saying is, the problem is a dysfunctional interaction
right.
between parent and child. So we want to move away from the idea that there's something wrong with the child or parent.
Right.
There's something wrong with the interaction.
Right.
Okay, so that's where we want to focus, put our focus, is on the interaction between the two.
Right.
Okay. There's one other sentence one other concept that I want to mention, and that is that the more that we try to change a child's behavior, a teenager's behavior, And there's this direct correlation. The harder we push, the more we demand, the more resistant they're going to become.
Right.
And we have, you and I both have, a number of families who are finding that the harder they push,
mm-hmm.
the
mm-hmm.
more resistant the child becomes.
Right.
Okay. Children will self-destruct if you
mm-hmm.
push them hard enough, long enough,
right.
and far enough. Okay?
Right.
They will win this battle.
Right.
One way or the other.
Right.
They're going to win this battle.
Right.
And so our advice to parents is don't start down this slope to begin with.
Right.
Because the harder you push,
yeah.
what you have to anticipate is your child is going to become more resistant.
Right.
You can't punish enough, and you can't do enough aversive things to change a child who doesn't want to change.
Right.
And they're simply going to become more resistant.
Yeah, that's yeah, so very true. Because it goes back to the control again.
That's right.
You know, the more you attempt to control them, the more they're going to resist being controlled.
They're either going to give up and become depressed and just fall backwards and just say, do whatever you want, I don't
right.
care anymore. And they won't do anything.
Right.
Okay. Or they're going to become not passively aggressive, they're going to become aggressively aggressive. One of two things is going to happen.
Right. Well, and even if they give up, that giving up is only temporary,
right.
typically.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, at 18 or 19 or whenever it is, they're going to leave the home and then they're going to do what they want to
and
anyways.
Do what they want.
And
right.
and we for whatever reason, I'm not sure where so many parents get it in their mind or gain the perspective that if I force it, it'll become a value.
Right.
And it
eventually they'll accept.
It doesn't really work that way. It just doesn't work that way. So we really have to adjust the way that we hold these expectations, right? Because it's not. See, to me, it's not even intuitive to think that the harder you push, the more likely they are to accept the idea. Because there's nothing, there's nowhere else in our lives as children or as adults where that's the case.
Right.
Where the more that you try to force me to believe something, mm-hmm. the more likely I am to believe it. That just doesn't make sense.
It's not human nature.
No.
It just isn't how it works.
Right. And so as parents, we really... See, this is... You start kind of getting frustrated.
This is an important topic. That's what I said. This is a topic that's close to our hearts.
Yeah.
Because...
And well, he says one of this... He has a line in here that I think is... That you really pointed out to me that I think that we should just read directly.
Mm-hmm.
He says, teenagers who are entrenched in a control battle-based mm-hmm. relationship with their parents are not on the appropriate curve for their developmental stage. And the more extreme and the longer the control battle lasts, the farther behind they fall.
That's exactly what I'm saying with these teenagers who are locked in these battles with their parents, is that the children, the teenagers, are not developing normally because all their energy is going into the battle.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And so they don't make progress. And parents say, well... He's not changing. Nothing is changing. He just isn't getting... No, they don't change. They don't continue mm-hmm. to develop because all of their energy is now going into the battle.
Right. This is just a very quick, basic example. Many parents battle with their teenage boys, mm-hmm. we'll say, over relationships. Or it could be girls too.
Okay.
Over relationships, significant other, boyfriend, girlfriend stuff.
Okay.
You're not allowed to have a girlfriend. You're not allowed to have a boyfriend. You're not allowed to have him as a boyfriend. You're not allowed to have her as a girlfriend,
right.
Because of different issues. And so, what happens though is that, and there, I have dozens of patients, teenagers that I work with, who mm-hmm. are in exactly this situation, where. Despite the fact that their parents tell them they're not allowed to have boyfriends and girlfriends, they have boyfriends and girlfriends.
Right.
Despite the fact that their parents are telling them that they're not allowed to spend time with that particular person, they're spending time with that particular person.
Right.
And so what's happening is that they're resisting their parent,
right.
and they're resisting them from the perspective that I'm going to spend time with this person because they're telling me not to.
That's right.
And they're not developing the relational skill of understanding that that's an unhealthy relationship.
That's right. That's right. You can't.
The parents trying to tell them that.
Right.
But they're trying to tell them that by forcing them to stay right. away from that person
right.
instead of having a conversation with them. And
you deny the child the opportunity to learn these skills. You know,
right.
when the parent says, no, you can't be with that person, the parent may be right.
Right.
But this is something the child has to discover and will.
Mm-hmm.
When she gets burned, when she gets taken advantage of, when she
right.
gets abused, she's going to learn this lesson eventually.
Right.
So I understand that parents want to protect their children.
Right.
But if you protect them too much, you deny them the opportunity to grow and to develop and learn these lessons on
right.
their own.
Exactly. Exactly. So you have to allow some of this to happen. And it's mm-hmm. easily done because
right.
all you have to do is sit down and, you know, and listen.
Mm-hmm.
And talk with them. Okay, so mm-hmm. what is it about this person that you like so
right.
much?
Mm-hmm.
This is what I see. When right. when you come home from this, from spending time with mm-hmm. him or her, you seem to be very down. Well, and they'll say, well, it's because if you're talking with them and not judging them and not demanding things from them,
right.
they'll talk with you and say, mm-hmm. well, it's because he does this or because
right.
she does that. You say, well, sometimes that's not the sign of a very healthy relationship.
Right.
And so you really might want to think about, you know, being in a relationship with someone who makes you feel good as opposed
right.
to being... And now you're having a conversation, so your child is learning what relationships are meant to be
right, right.
as opposed to enforcing upon them your values that, again, may be completely right.
That's right.
But they're not going to hear.
You might be right as a parent, but that's not the issue. It
right.
is no longer the issue that you're right. Because as soon as you prohibit a relationship, you can no longer have a conversation with your child about that.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
As soon as you prohibit your child from doing anything, you can no longer have a conversation about
that. And it's so funny because we know this as adults, because as soon as you tell yourself, I'm pointing to the camera, as soon as you tell yourself that you can't have a donut, what's the first thing you want?
You get obsessed over it.
You want a donut.
Right.
As soon as we tell ourselves or tell somebody else that they can't have something, mm-hmm. all they want is that thing.
It becomes very attractive.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's why those kind of diets don't work.
Right.
And that's why
right.
we really need to
denial
change
diets. Right.
That kind of right. perspective and those kinds of ideas. So.
And there's a second part of that concept about the developmental trend. Is that when you begin to prohibit things, your children, your teenagers will start to get good at manipulating,
mm-hmm,
lying,
mm-hmm, right.
avoiding,
right.
Becoming very passive. They will get good at those sorts of, which is exactly what you don't want.
Right.
Okay. So the more pressure you put,
right.
the more they're going to become manipulative, dishonest, and avoidant.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So in this column, he presents the ending, the parent-teen control battle approach
right.
that he uses, and there's
right.
there's a few steps.
That's right. Because if you continue the conflict, two things happen. For the parents, they feel defeated.
Right.
Okay, they get discouraged, defeated. Some get angry, some just give up and
mm-hmm.
say, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one problem. The teenager begins to feel powerless to resist
right.
because they don't have any, the parents control all the resources.
Right.
You know, most teenagers don't make enough money, they don't have enough access, they have to ask permission to use the car. So the teenager feels more powerless, the parent feels defeated,
mm-hmm.
and then things really do start to break down.
Right.
So the solution.
So he has three steps.
Mm-hmm.
I like three steps.
I know. That was the only thing about this that I didn't like, is he had three.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So step one is to help the parent and teen realize
right.
that they really have the same goals.
Right. They probably do.
We mentioned it earlier,
right.
but it's almost universal mm-hmm. that parents and teens have the same goal. Now, they may define the goals differently. They may imagine what the goals look like a little bit
mm-hmm.
differently.
Mm-hmm.
But they have the same goals.
Right.
To be happy, to be successful, to do well at school, or to do well, you know, in whatever it is that you're choosing to do. You have the same goals.
Right. Most children are going to end up very much like their parents.
Right.
I mean, we don't stray too far from our parents,
right.
you know, whether we want to or not. I mean, we don't stray too far. So I think we do have the same goals. One of the things that people struggle with here, I've noticed, is religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when children begin to, I don't think children want to be atheists.
Right.
They just want to be different from their parents. If their parents
right.
go to church, they don't want to go to church.
Right.
Okay? So again, it's one of those battles that's not worth waging, because the child doesn't want to be an atheist. They just want to find their own way.
Right.
They're all going to end up as believers eventually.
Well, and let's be honest, if your parents are atheists, you're going to be very drawn
you're going to go to church.
Right. You're going to be drawn to that. And so it does go in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
It again isn't necessarily that they want or will ultimately end up being so mm-hmm. different from their parents.
Right.
It's that they have to explore that difference to find their own identity.
They're going to separate, and they separate with food, clothing, hairstyles, friends, religious beliefs.
Right.
Those are the places where children want to exercise their independence and their control.
Right.
You know, what are my parents like? How do I separate? I have to become different.
Right.
If my parents are churchgoers, I can't be a churchgoer. Well,
right.
I can be, but I really don't believe in it.
Right.
But it's not something you want to fight about. You
right.
want to let them explore,
mm-hmm.
let them figure out what role that's going to play in their lives.
Right.
And then you can become a part of that process.
Right.
If you start prohibiting or you start demanding, you're going to be left out of the process, because the child's not going to be able to talk to you about what he's not allowed to do.
Right. Now, step two, mm-hmm. hopefully can be a pretty quick step,
right.
but
mm-hmm.
sometimes it's not going to be, and that is to help the parent and teen understand that the parent or the teen isn't the problem.
Right.
The battle is the problem.
Right. That's right.
It's not that they have different approaches to solving the same problem. It's that they're arguing and they're battling over
that's right.
who is going to be in control. That's the problem.
Right, because when they first come into our office, we're talking to the child alone, they right. say, oh, my parents are
right.
fill in the blank.
Right.
Okay. And parents come in and say, oh, my son is a little pain in the fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're blaming each other. Okay?
Right.
And what you want to do is you want to move them away from blaming a person to saying, the problem is the conflict, not the person.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And then we get to step three. And step three is for each of them, the parent and the teen, to gain their own individual tools and strategies for ending the battle.
That's right, that's right.
And so this is where, you know, he talks about a couple of different tools for each of them. Mm-hmm. A couple of tools for the parents and a couple of tools for the teen.
But you slid, I mean, I want to repeat one of the phrases you used to end the battle.
Right.
Because the focus of therapy is taken off the child.
Right.
You know, it had been,
right.
we're going to fix this kid. You're taking the focus of all the therapy is what do the parents have to do to end the battle? What does the teenager have to do to
right.
end the battle?
Right.
But it removes the focus from the people.
Right.
And puts, right. And that's
right.
really important.
Right.
So that's a significant change in therapy.
Yeah. So let's talk really quickly about the different tools. So mm-hmm. we'll start with the parental tools.
Right.
All right. And so the first tool that the parent really needs
right.
is to adjust and be able to see their teen mm-hmm. in a much healthier manner.
Right. Right.
Because they're seeing their teenager as oppositional, as defiant, as resistant, as
disobedient,
all defined, of these negative things,
right. disrespectful,
and, right? And so we really need to shift that and start mm-hmm. start encouraging parents and teaching them how
right.
to see their teenager in a more positive light.
Right.
And it's hard to do that sometimes. It's hard, you know, when your teenager's failing school or making yeah. grades lower than what you expect them to make, mm-hmm. when they're, you know, choosing friends that you don't agree with,
right.
It is really difficult to like your teenager mm-hmm. in those kinds of situations.
Right.
Nonetheless, we have to find a way to like them.
And this is why you don't let things go so far that you really do begin to
right.
hate each other.
Right.
Okay. And that's why you can't start prohibiting and demanding
right.
and commanding right off the bat, because you're going to go down these paths where
right.
you are going to start disliking each other. So if you start early,
mm-hmm.
you can redefine. I mean, as frustrated as we get with our children, we really do love them.
Right.
Okay. And every child has some positive qualities.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what we have to start doing, is think of the positive qualities that our children have.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The second tool that we work with parents mm-hmm. to do is to shift from consequences to accountability.
Right.
And so this is what we were talking about with grades,
mm-hmm.
for example, just as an easy example. I can apply consequences for poor grades.
Right.
Or I can require my teen or expect my teen mm-hmm. to accept the responsibility
that's right.
of what happens when you make poor grades.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
if you make a D on a test,
mm-hmm.
and I had this big discussion with a parent not long ago. She was so frustrated because he made a D on a test,
mm-hmm.
but the teacher, she let him take a retake, and then he got a B on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so she's not holding him accountable. So I gotta get on him and do this. So wait a minute, what your teenager did
mm-hmm.
was your teenager used resources. He approached the teacher about the poor grade.
Mm-hmm.
He communicated with her, negotiated with her, whatever he did. Hopefully appropriate stuff
right.
to get to where he can retake the test.
That's right.
And then he did better.
Using
why is that not a great thing?
Using all the resources at his disposal.
Right.
You know, he was able to make it right.
Right.
I mean, he took a what could have been a catastrophic thing.
Right.
And using all of the skills that any teenager could possibly possess to rectify the situation
right.
and get back on track.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
You
know. And it's funny because when I think about these things, I think about conversations you and I have had in the mm-hmm. past. Like when I was about to sit for my licensure exam,
mm-hmm.
you know, we talked about how, you know, there are these $1,000 studying programs and, you know, people go to these, you know, week-long courses to to study, and people spend, you know, 6 months studying and everything. And we had that conversation that, you know what, let's just take it. Take it the first time, see what happens.
Right.
If you don't do well, you, then you study and you go through all of that. But if you already know enough, and that's because the way that the test was, and we didn't have to retake it, by the way. I'll just say that. But
that's right. I've taken it 8 times.
9th time's a charm.
Right.
But no, but when that opportunity is present.
Right.
So when you think about your student, mm-hmm. and the teacher has the classroom sort of thing. Rules that right. if you fail a test, you can retake it. Mm-hmm. If he's not spending 13 hours studying for a test that he knows that if he fails, he can retake.
Right.
It's a battle that we all have to fight.
Don't fight that battle.
There's no reason to fight. You're not going to convince him that he needs to spend those 13 hours when he feels that he already knows it well enough.
The parent is right again.
Right.
Okay.
Sure.
Parents, you're right.
Right.
But that's not the issue here.
Right.
Right. It's not a question of who's right.
Right. Absolutely. It's not about who's right. It's mm-hmm. about allowing your teenager to figure out how to manage that. And so what that might mean is that if he fails it, he's going to have to stay after school one day.
You know,
that's going to be something that he has to deal with.
If you think of your teenager as a souffle. You want a souffle? If you think of your child as a loaf of bread, they're developing. If you open the oven too soon, it's going to get flat. It's going to collapse. The souffle will die if you open the oven too. And that's how parents have to think of children. Yes, parents, you're right, because you're already finished. You're cooked. You know how this works. But your child has a right to learn. Now your child must learn how to do this, just as you learned how to do it. You know, okay.
If you take them out too early, they'll be doughy. And
if you intervene too early, mm-hmm. you're going to ruin the souffle.
Yeah.
And that, number three.
There's no number three. That's two.
You said there were three.
No, there's two tools for parents, two tools for teenagers.
Yeah. What are the two for teenagers?
Well, let's.
I like the thing about forget about consequences.
Yeah.
Because we talk about that in our book too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the two tools for teenagers, and I like this because we're not saying leave them alone.
Right.
Teenagers have some responsibility too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is their responsibility, is to understand that they have responsibilities.
That's right. That's right.
Too often, and this kind of goes back to other issues that could be hour-long podcasts, and that is the fact that we have to make sure that our teens are capable of managing responsibilities.
Right.
Your teenager has gone for 14 years and you have managed everything.
All the decisions, getting their clothes ready, putting them at the front door, packing all the lunches, doing all the laundry.
When they did poorly on a test, you were the one that contacted the teacher.
Right.
Why would we assume that he or she has the skills to handle responsibilities when he's 15?
That's right.
He has 14 years of experience of somebody else taking care of those things.
Somebody else takes care of it.
So we have to make sure that the teenagers understand that they have responsibility and that they have the skills to take care of those responsibilities.
That's right. And we need to give them the skills or teach them the skills,
right.
Not do it for them.
Right.
And not punishing them for not doing it.
Right.
But to teach them how.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talked about this. I think we wrote a letter like a column or something recently about some of this that, you know, If your kid has never had to study,
that's right,
and now all of a sudden he's in a class where he needs to study,
there's no help.
Studying is a skill. It's not an innate ability. So you have to know how to do it. And if you don't know how to do it, somebody has to teach you.
Every university in the country has attrition larger than they want, attrition of very capable students mm-hmm. who flunk out of college the first or second semester. Because they never had to study in high school. It doesn't matter that they're all A's. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter that they're highly intelligent. They don't have any study skills. They don't know how to study because they never had to. They never had to learn it before. We had high attrition rates at the University of Texas. These really bright kids, straight A students, would come to the University of Texas, mm-hmm. fall apart in the first semester because they don't know how to study. They don't know how to read and study because they never had to.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unfortunate. Now, the second tool that teenagers really need is to develop a respectful attitude towards their parents.
Right.
And I do like that he included this, though it is frustrating that it's included.
Right.
Because I think that we use the word respect incorrectly.
Right.
Most parents, when they use the word respect, they're actually talking about compliance.
And obedience. That's right. That's right. Obedience, you know, and compliance.
Right. And what we're talking about with respect here is to respect your parents from the perspective of, you know, they are ultimately responsible for you. Mm-hmm. They are an authority from the perspective of having had life experiences that you have not yet had.
Right. That's right.
And so respecting them from the perspective that they have knowledge. They understand things, they know some things, and that everything that they say is not invalid.
It's that respect your elders concept. Doesn't matter who the elder is, you know.
Right.
And so it is with your parents. You know, you should respect them as you respect anybody else.
Right.
You know, there's no reason not to.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter who the person is, people deserve your respect.
Right.
Part of being human.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and you can't carry these attitudes, these negative attitudes,
right,
and antisocial attitudes around with you, because there's no need to do that.
Yeah. So if the parents gain their tools, the teenager implements and uses their tools,
right,
and then everybody is working with the goal of getting rid of the battles.
Get rid of the battles. Get rid of the conflict.
Things resolve pretty quickly.
Right, right. You stop arguing, you stop fighting, you start pushing each other.
And I love it when parents say, you know, we fight over this every night. You want to say, well, if you're fighting over it every night, we probably should try something different.
Try something different.
Because somebody's not getting the message.
Right, right.
And I'm not sure who it is. I'm not sure if it's the teen that's not getting the message or the parent that's not getting the message. But somebody didn't get the message.
You know, I think of these sports analogies. Like, I swing the bat the same way every time, and I keep missing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that like 300 times in a row.
Yeah.
Time to change your swing.
Yeah. Or maybe watch the ball so you swing the bat where the ball is. That would help.
No, it's the analogy holds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just try something else.
Absolutely. So, all right.
I love this column. So,
please read it. It is a great column. We would definitely encourage you to read it.
If you're struggling with a teenager, take a look at this. Take it to heart. There's really a lot of really, really valuable information in there.
Yeah.
So take a look at it.
Absolutely. So, all right. That is it for this.
That's it for today.
Now, we have an announcement of something that we're planning, we're putting together, but that we want to begin pretty quickly.
Yes.
That's timely. What
you say? It's a timely topic.
Yes. Everyone.
Not everyone.
We say everyone and their mother has heard about...
You know, I was thinking about that.
What?
Most people with children between the ages of 10 and up.
Probably.
There are probably lots of parents who have no idea that this little thing is swirling around out
there.
So I was thinking about that the other night, that it's really going to be, if you don't have children,
maybe
this probably isn't an issue. If you have very young children, it may not be an issue. But if you have children over to the age of 10 or 11, you're probably hearing about this.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that is the new Netflix original series, 13 Reasons Why.
13 Reasons Why.
We are planning a podcast series that we're going to actually, I know this makes you a little nervous.
Makes me a little nervous because we're moving in that techno field again.
Techno is a kind of music.
What should I use? Do you know that he won't allow me to have a Twitter account?
You're mentioning that again.
No, I have to because I'm not allowed to have a Twitter account.
You can have whatever kind of account you want.
You said I couldn't. And with good reason.
This is a battle that I have with my teenager.
Older teenager.
My
very old teenager.
You've gone up.
So why is this going to be... Why is this going to be... I'm headed back to early teenager. there is a circle.
You're going back to it again.
I'm coming back to the beginning.
Pretty soon you won't be able to drive anymore.
And I'll be in diapers. But I can't have a Twitter account.
You can have whatever kind of account you want.
No, you told me I would be. It would probably be dangerous for me.
It would be dangerous.
Because I would do things that I don't intend.
That's true.
I never
That's
do
true.
That. You, I did it the other day.
You're like, oh, look, that one has a Twitter thing on it. And all of a sudden you're posting pictures of things that you probably shouldn't
could that
be posting.
Happen?
It could happen.
Oh, then I'm probably
You don't
want to
do that.
I'm probably better off
So.
So this is we're gonna talk about this series.
Yes,
analyze this series.
So
we're talk about it.
What we're planning to do is a podcast video series mm-hmm. that we're going to actually do live mm-hmm. on YouTube, where we'll do live sessions.
Right,
they'll last anywhere probably from an hour to an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. We're tossing around the idea of either doing one episode at a time, mm-hmm. or maybe mm-hmm. clustering two or three episodes at a time, just thinking about how long mm-hmm. this will take, because we will probably only do one a week.
Right.
We're talking about doing it on Thursday evenings.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Probably starting around 6:30 or 7 o'clock, we'll start airing.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to watch us via YouTube.
Right.
You can go to our YouTube channel
watch
it live
right.
and
mm-hmm.
interact with us. We'll be able to take questions mm-hmm. Through the YouTube chat, I'll give you a Twitter hashtag that you'll be able to use. So we'll be able to monitor that as well. You know what that is.
But I don't have Twitter.
You won't need it because you'll be here with me, so it'll be okay.
All right.
But you'll be able to interact with us, ask questions, and offer some of your views and perspectives while we have this discussion on the series 13 Reasons Why.
How long would it take to watch the entire series, just if you sat down?
There's 13,
about 2.5 hours?
There's 13 episodes, and each one lasts between 45 minutes and an hour.
Oh, so it would take...
So it would take about 10 hours to watch them all.
Oh, because several of my students, graduate students, told me that they watched the whole thing. Would mm-hmm. they have spent 12 hours?
I've watched the whole thing.
At one time?
People do that. Saturdays.
You didn't watch the whole thing at one time.
No.
You don't have 12 hours.
I would watch a few episodes at a time.
Okay.
Right. But there are people, yeah, there's lots of people who binge it that
way. Well, my daughter said she and her roommate watched it straight mm-hmm. through.
Yeah.
And one of my students said she watched it. She found it so compelling.
It's easy to do.
She's a teacher.
It's easy to do.
So for her, it was compelling to watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
It kept her engaged.
Yeah.
She said, yeah, I watched the whole thing at one time.
Yeah. There were a number of evenings that I stayed up later than I wanted to finish an episode.
Watch. Okay.
But it's a fantastic series, but there's lots to talk about with it.
Okay.
And so we will. I'll be announcing some of the mm-hmm. details.
Okay.
Tentatively, our plan is to start this coming Thursday.
Yeah. What is that? The 27th.
The 27th. The evening mm-hmm. of the 27th. We are looking to start then.
Right.
Follow us on Twitter. It's at Dr. Bernie, DrBerney.
On Twitter.
Dr. Marshall is somebody else. It's not him. So at Dr. Bernie, DrBerney. Or on Facebook, we have... Psychological Associates of Central Florida mm-hmm. or The Mental Breakdown. You can mm-hmm. you can find it there or on our blog, TheMentalBreakdown.com. Mm-hmm. We'll be putting this information out there, or you can email us
mm-hmm.
And you can get to us that way.
Right.
Message us on YouTube on this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of ways to get in touch with us, but
right.
we'll be getting that information out there. We'll be announcing it on the shows, the podcast that we mm-hmm. Put out next week.
Right.
The plan, though, is to we'll probably record it and air it live on Thursday night, and then it will mm-hmm. post as a podcast and YouTube video on mm-hmm. Saturday, that subsequent
okay.
Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So if you miss the live chat, you'll be able to get the recording on Saturday.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, you excited?
I'm excited about Twitter.
All right. Well, that
I need
is
a
it.
Hashtag.
I'm excited about this because this is going to be our first live.
That's what I'm
thingy.
Excited about. I'm going to see how this live broadcast works.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's hopefully you know, a lot of you will be able to participate live so that you'll be able to interact with us and ask questions and join in a conversation. Because again, there is a lot to talk about with this program. And if we, what our hopes are is that we'll also have sort of an extra show that we'll do where we talk about the book, because the book is a little bit different. It is a good read. You know, so.
My younger daughter read the book and enjoyed it.
The book is different because the book isn't quite as, not as graphic,
right,
and explicit as the film. The videos, the series is TVMA, so be mindful of, you know, who's around when you're watching it, because they use
graphic
teenage language, and there's certainly graphic images of all kinds of things,
assaults and
assaults, abuse, and everything. So, all right, that's it.
Okay,
can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be
Thursday's going to be awesome.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, that is it for today. So, until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.